This is Bob Whitaker, and I'm doing Porch Talk. And I want to do a program called Black Heroes. But this puts a knot in my stomach. Because usually when a white guy does a thing about black heroes, the white guy is groveling on his knees. He's the guilt complex, and he's talking about the horrible way white people treated black people and all that. And I am terrified that when somebody sees a title like Black Heroes, he's going to think that I'm one of those groveling whites. And I despise those people. But it is important to talk about the actual heroes of the black community from our point of view. Remember, you're listening to a white man. Don't, as I say, a lot of young people will say, well, you said so-and-so, and you said so-and-so, and I'm making a big thing of this. No, I am Bob Whitaker. This is Porch Talk. What I say is what I mean. 99, like every other human being, 99% of what I say is not going to make any sense at all. And you take what you want, and the rest of it, you don't spend your time laying around being terribly upset because this beacon of the world, a lot of these professors and so forth, they always act like they're the final truth, and a lot of conservative talk hosts are sort of the final truth. Look, I'm just talking. I've been around a long time. I try to be entertaining. I mean, if you're sitting out on the porch in the South, which is as alien to a lot of people in the world as Mars, but if you're white or you're black and you're Southern, you're used to some old guy talking on the porch. And when he gets on to his 14th story about how tough life was when he was young, you find a very polite way. We're very respectful people. You find a polite way to edge out of the way and stop listening to him. But later in life, you're always glad you listen to the old guy talk. So, let me talk about black heroes to me. And please, please, please do not confuse me with the whites who are groveling around on the floor trying to find black geniuses and stuff. But the first example that really makes me want to say this is I heard about the Nation of Islam and they're marching through the halls of the projects. The projects are not safe places. Projects where black people live have gun incidents, they have drug dealers, and remember these guys are out for money, and they're run by the mob, and they are vicious. And then I read every now and then about these, by the way, the fanatically anti-white black Nation of Islam people, and they're marching along those halls. And they're looking for drug dealers. Now, I don't know what happens when they meet these drug dealers. but I have a fair idea. The problem is, of course, these drug dealers are black. And a lot of black leaders will say, well, it's just poverty and, you know, there are all sorts of reasons for this, and this fellow is a drug dealer because of this and the other. These Nation of Islam guys are not all that forgiving. They chase these SOBs out because these SOBs are hurting their people. And they don't have any sympathy with them, and I personally would very much hate to be one of these drug dealers who ran in to a posse of black, of Nation of Islam types. See, this to an American is, I guess, to the old American spirit, is very charming. To a European, it would be, my God, these are vigilantes. These are vicious people and all that. And a lot of people say that the Nation of Islam is anti-white. Well, that's okay. I don't stay awake at night worrying about whether black people are anti-white or not. But for a man, well, let me tell you the kind of black, quote, leaders, unquote, I was used to in Washington, D.C. These are people who have expensive houses in Chevy Chase, Maryland, and they get paid prodigious sums of money to have that black skin on their face, and they attack the Confederate flag. And actually, they're very useful to white liberals, because the white liberals get to speak for the black community, and they sort of control the vote and all that. To me, this is politics as usual. Meanwhile, these Nation of Islam types are down in there, marching through their own community and beating the living hell out of those who are selling drugs to children, those who are making trouble. These are not sophisticated people. These are loyal, dedicated, and generally unpaid people. And so, please, please do not confuse me with the whites who are trying to grovel around saying that, you know, that we're guilty and black people are wonderful and all that sort of thing. I'm just saying that image always sticks in my mind. I have this image of these Nation of Islam guys marching down that hall and defending their own people. Now that, to me, is heroic. Stokely Carmichael. Now let me hit my computer here, because one thing I do not want to do. You know, when Muhammad Ali changed his name, a lot of people, a lot of whites, wanted to call him Cassius Clay. Now, I'm an old Southerner, and I think that a man has a right to his own name. The man I called Stokely Carmichael, who's the founder of the Black Muslims, he was a rough guy. He wanted to play it rough. And he demanded black power. You see, black people generally were and are considered by liberals to be, I don't know how many of you are old enough to remember the Lone Ranger and his faithful Indian companion, Tonto. And that's kind of the way white people liked it. You know, you had the white guy and his faithful Indian companion. I think if you ever saw Goldfinger. Now, what was the name of that Korean guy that was the. Anyway, had the hat that he swung in the air and would cut into things. Absolutely loyal. And he was sort of the faithful companion, colored companion, in this case Korean, to Goldfinger. And this was the way sort of white people looked at it. And of course today, liberals look at colored people, first of all, as a category. You may be Hispanic, maybe black, you may be whatever, maybe a homosexual, whatever. You're sort of the faithful companions of the liberals, and apparently, from what I can tell, at least publicly, there's no objection to this except Louis Farrakhan. Now, Louis Farrakhan, it's an interesting thing. I read about he's anti-white. Well, there's no doubt about it, he's anti-white. Why wouldn't he be? But I have never, and I'm open to correction on this, I have never heard anybody talk about someone who complained about someone who's anti-white, unless they said he's anti-white and anti-Semitic. And I kind of wonder whether the complaint is about people who are anti-white or people who are anti-Semitic. As I keep saying today, we keep talking about this race problem. And this race problem only exists in white majority countries. We never talk about a race problem in Japan or Kenya or Taiwan. That's what I call Whitaker's mantra, that this race problem only exists in white majority countries. This race problem will only be solved when each white country, only white countries, bring in large parts of the third world and, quote, assimilate with them, unquote. Now, a black man, if someone said there's this race problem, and they said, and then they specified, listed all the black countries in the world, Belize, say, Jamaica, each country in sub-Saharan Africa, and they were to say, there's this race problem we've got to find the final solution to. And then somebody say, well, how about, isn't there a race problem in like France? Isn't there a race problem in other countries? You'd say, well, you're getting off the subject, or I don't understand what you're talking about. The race problem has to be solved by bringing in huge numbers of non-blacks into every black country and only into black countries. And all these people talk about bringing in that the race problem will be solved when every white country and only white countries assimilate with these vast numbers of non-white immigrants. But if you said the same thing, as I say, if you said to a black man, if you specified every black country on earth, and then you said that there's a race problem there, and he said, well, what we need is to really bring in the non-blacks, I think it would take the average black man of normal intelligence to say, you're not talking about the race problem, you're talking about the black problem. And you're talking about the final solution to the black problem, and the final solution to the race problem is called genocide. It'd take about 30 seconds for him to make that connection. So if it's a white man, I'm a little upset about what they call the race problem. Forgive me. I've got the same sort of feelings that a black man has. I'm just as human as he is. I see this race problem and the solution to the race problem and this any racism. Well, we're doing porch talk. I think they're talking about genocide against white people. So I have a little, what I would consider realistic approach to this thing. And Stokely Carmichael, whose real name, because he changed it to Kwame Ture. Now, he was a hell of a contrast to the black leaders who make a fortune sitting around in Chevy Chase, Maryland, complaining about the Confederate flag. Let me tell you about Kwame Ture. He founded the black Muslims. The Black Panthers. Kwame Ture said, we don't want anything the white man has but power. This is a power relationship. Now, in his day, Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, was considered just awful by the media and so forth. The reason he was considered just awful was because he was breaking this rule of the liberals having these faithful colored companions. Kwame Ture wanted power for black people. Now, the NAACP had existed since 1905. We were talking about in the 1960s, it had never had a black president. The president had always been Jewish. And they, the blacks were assumed to be the faithful colored companions. And every liberal can tell you how every black man thinks. Listen to them. Well, to a certain extent, they do. You know, we reactionary whites, were treating black people like dogs, so I can see why they went over that way. You know, that's common sense. But when Stokely Carmichael started talking about, we want power for ourselves, not as an adjunct to liberals. We appreciate all they did for us and all that stuff, but we want our own power. And finally, in the 1960s, a revolution in the NAACP because they had a black president, which is a lot like a country club having its first black member. The position, the place of blacks, you know, they liberals don't mind blacks as long as they stay in their place. Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, There was something else odd about Stokely Carmichael. And the reason I use that name is because most people recognize it. Carmichael died in Africa. Now, I've been in Africa. I've been in Africa a lot. It is not a very pleasant place to be in. That's why he died over there. Now, the reason that Stokely Carmichael changed his name to Kwame Ture, the reason he went over to Africa, one of the very rough spots, was because he wanted to help black people. He could have made a fortune if he had just said, "I have renounced all this white separatist, black separatist bit. All this black power bit. I've renounced it," and so forth, which is what most of these leaders do. They start off radical, and then they proceed to be converted. Sometimes they say, "I've become a Christian," or something. Then they sell out, and they get good money for it, and then they get to settle down in the suburbs, and whenever the newsmen want a token black guy to back up the liberal agenda, they run over there. Now, I am very proud of the fact that, now please don't think this sounds like I'm sounding proud. We had a tiny little group, and the press man of the group would meet weekly with Stokely Carmichael at an Ethiopian restaurant in Washington, D.C., and they would talk about the respective interests of white people and black people, how we could handle things. It wasn't very productive, of course, but it was a comradeship, sort of. And I'm sure that all the white separatists will say, you know, what a horrible thing to do, and I'm sure all the black leaders will say, well, you were just associating with the fanatical fringe and so forth. But the life of Stokely Carmichael, to me, is the life of a man who just would not get off the fact that his mission in life was not to provide the final solution to the white problem. He learned to care about the white problem. And one of the statements that I will never see, in fact, I've been quoted several times in major newspapers saying, quoting Stokely Carmichael, when he said, "If I hear 6 million Jews one more time, I am going to puke." He said, "We have our own dead to bury." Now, for one who has been raised all his life, and 6 million Jews, I'm already boring you, right? Try that 5,000 times. The fact that Hitler persecuted Jews was a horrible thing. I've always wanted to have a bumper sticker that said, "Which Holocaust?" Because slaughter, horrible slaughter, throughout the 20th century was almost routine. There's some debate about whether Stalin starved 5 million or up to 22 million Ukrainians to death. Now, Mel Gibson got so tired. It's a weird thing. Mel Gibson made a movie called The Patriot in which he showed in South Carolina, we South Carolinians tend to get a little nasty when we fight each other. And he showed a church full of people being burned alive. They were trapped inside the church and burned alive during the Revolution. There were actual objections from the Jewish community because they had incidents of Jews being burned alive, and they didn't like his pointing out that that had happened to Jews. I mean, Mel Gibson never made an anti-Semitic statement in his life, but somehow this became anti-Semitic. And I wrote Alan Combs, you know, Hannity and Combs. He was still speaking to me at the time. He's Jewish. And he said, because he and Billy Graham Jr. had gotten together and said what a horrible thing it was. Well, Mel Gibson had gotten tired of being accused of anti-Semitic, of being anti-Semitic, because he was talking, because of course his movie on Christ, and then his having these people burned to death. He was getting a little tired of being accused of being anti-Semitic. And he said the Jews were not the only people in history who were ever persecuted. And so he mentioned these people, these Ukrainians who were starved to death by Stalin. And the liberal Jewish and respectable conservative press raised bloody hell against him for his anti-Semitism. So I asked Alan Combs, and I will give him credit, at least he would talk to me. I said, what's anti-Semitic about that? And he wrote back and he said, he is trivializing the Holocaust, the Holocaust, the Jewish Holocaust. And I said, how would you like it if I called up and violated the rules, because email the private. And I said, I quoted him as saying, this was trivializing to refer to Ukrainians who were starved to death. He said they were trivializing the Holocaust. And I might write him and ask him, or call him and ask him, what is trivial about Ukrainians? You see, Ukrainians think that being starved to death is not particularly trivial. Well, that was when he finally stopped talking to me. And years before that, when Stokely Carmichael said, if I hear 6 million Jews one more time, I'm going to puke. It was so great because that's all I had ever heard. I'd read about slaughters, murders, and persecutions all through history. But this Holocaust was horrible. I don't know how big it was. The European governments, if you say it was less than 6 million Jews, they put you in prison. One fellow just got sentenced to 3 years in an Austrian prison for disagreeing with the numbers. He was called a Holocaust denial because he said the numbers of Jews killed by Hitler were less than the official figures. So it's a big deal. So you can imagine, I mean, if European countries will actually imprison you for saying the wrong thing about the Holocaust, you can imagine during my life what the pressure was if you get that particular slaughter just right. Well, of course, Jews have a particular view toward the thing, and if I were a Jew, I'd have a particular view toward the slaughter of my people too, but my people are not Jews. And when Stokely Carmichael said, you know, he was a little tired of 6 million Jew bit. You know, a lot of blacks died in their own situation. I thought that was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I was just so happy to hear him. And the fact that Kwame Ture, he changed his name to Kwame Ture, and I think a man has a right to his own name. When Cassius Clay changed his name to Muhammad X, a man has a right to his own name. Now, this is an old Southern attitude. This doesn't say anything about my civil rights attitude or that I am a great friend of black people or anything like that. It's just an attitude that a man has a right to his own name. Kwame Ture went over to Africa and he died over there helping his own people. That impresses me. Those Nation of Islam guys marching along and actually taking on, instead of talking about, well, the government should take on this, that, and the other, they just went out there and took them on. And, you know, to an old-fashioned American, that's the quintessence. That's when somebody actually, that's a real man. Now, if black people won't have a bad attitude for white people, that's their business. And here's another thing. Now, you don't expect really white people to wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat thinking, my God, you know, black people don't like me, or this black person said something bad about white people. We don't do that, and you know it. And I think there's something slavish about the attitude when black people suddenly go to pieces over some old white guy's attitude toward black people. That's slavish, man. I was on the internet one time, and this Hispanic guy was bitching about some guy that had a bad attitude toward Hispanics. And I wrote him a very simple statement. I said, why should you give a damn what this guy thinks about Hispanics? And he said, you know, you've got a good point. Very simple. You know, you don't base your life on what other people think of you. Now, you do base your life on what people do to you. You know, if they make slaves out of black people, that is a serious problem. But we've gotten down to the point now where it's patronizing. It's disgusting that black people allow their leaders to talk about, well, you call me the wrong thing, you use the N-word and all that stuff, and here's this guy sitting in Chevy Chase, Maryland, and he's got a good income, and he gets paid to bitch about the Confederate flag and all that stuff. But we all, not just the black community, we all have a lot more problems than that. And I think it's sort of a holdover from the old slave attitude that black people worry. You know, a black person will worry, a black guy will worry himself to death because some old white guy like me doesn't want his daughter to marry a black. Who cares? What are you, my servant? You know, my attitude is not the sort of thing that should keep you awake at night. So there's a big division there. What I do to you is one thing. What I think is another thing. Well, that's just porch talk. That's my attitude. And I don't care if I'm right or wrong. I'm saying what I think. And I think if you disagree, you let me know. This is Bob Whitaker, Sports Talk.